This show is brought to you by SeatGeek, the perfect place to buy and sell tickets. Welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, and we have a good podcast for you today. Well, the NBA playoffs are heating up, the coaching carousel is in full swing. I think it's a good time to check in with my buddy Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, national NBA writer. A lot of topics to dive into. We'll do that next, the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, Chris Mannix.
Welcome back, Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. A busy week in the NBA, a busy week upcoming. So great to have Tim Bontemps, the NBA writer for the Washington Post, joining me here in studio. What's up, Tim?
What's up, man? You look like you're tired. Long night in Boston last night?
I was in Boston last night.
No, I'm not knocking you. I'm sure it was a long night.
And you know what? I had to stay off social media after 9 p.m. because everyone was tweeting about Game of Thrones.
And I managed to miss it somehow. I don't know how.
You missed Game of Thrones or you missed the tweeting about
Both.
Game of Thrones?
I managed to be on social media and not see anything about Game of Thrones and not watch it because I was watching basketball games.
So you didn't watch Game of Thrones?
No, I'm behind. I got to catch up. I'm in like season 3, I think.
That's depressing.
I've been busy watching a lot of basketball.
Well,
man.
There's basketball, but you can take an hour out of your Sunday.
Well, I want to try
up even later to.
The problem is I've been in a situation where I've kept trying to catch up.
Yep.
So I'm now just way behind. But I'm going to be traveling a lot the next month and a half, so I'm hoping to just knock out a couple hours a day.
You know, a great day is going to come when airlines and their Wi-Fi can allow streaming.
Man,
that'll
be the greatest day. I spend so much time on airlines, and I can't watch anything.
No, you can't. You barely get your web pages to load properly.
It's brutal.
It's even worse on Amtrak, though. Amtrak,
Wi-Fi
is awful.
Oh, it's terrible. I'm taking that train probably tomorrow to D.C. to see Scott Brooks, and it's the worst. You can't get any work done at all.
No, you really can't. So Amtrak, message to you. Delta, message to you. Clean it up. Get better Wi-Fi.
Right.
That's going to be
my only complaint with Delta.
Yes.
So get it fixed.
All right. So you were up late last night because Byron Scott is now the ex-coach of the L.A. Lakers. And you know what my first reaction to that was? Well, they hired him on a weird timetable, so they might as well fire him on a weird timetable. He was hired in, what, like August?
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
As like the last possible alternative. It seemed like they exhausted every other option. They were like, you know, Byron, you're an ex-Laker. You'll be loyal. You'll play Kobe. Just go with you and put you out there. Now, they fire him several days after both the aforementioned Scott Brooks and Tom Thibodeau are off the market. What do you make of that?
I mean, I think you're right. You know, the Lakers are a pretty dysfunctional organization now. This just kind of falls into that. I think they're basically Knicks West at this point. You know, people don't like
That's harsh, man.
I mean, look, people don't want to say that because they're friendly with Jeannie Buss, and the Lakers have this great tradition that the Knicks don't have, but look, the last few years. I mean, the Lakers have had four coaches, I think, the last 5 or 6 years. They've been a dysfunctional organization from top to bottom. You look at the circus that's gone on with Kobe Bryant the last couple of years, and he just hijacked the whole team. They don't seem to have any real direction on what they're doing. Now they fire Byron 10 days into the offseason. I think Scott Brooks would have been a perfect fit for what they're trying to do. You know, Tom Thibodeau is the best coach on the market, but Jim Buss was not giving up personnel control.
Right.
So Tom wasn't going to go there. Scott Brooks should have made a lot of sense for them. They want to try to sign Kevin Durant. They have all these young guys. It would have made he's a California guy, even though he's a NorCal guy. It would have made a lot of sense. They wait till he's off the market. Now you look around, and I mean, yeah, Luke Walton's the obvious candidate, but if Luke Walton doesn't want to go work there because it's a dysfunctional mess, I don't know where they turn. Who's the logical option then?
There really isn't, at least not one that jumps off the page right away. But if I'm Luke Walton, I wait until mid-May to decide whether I'm taking the Laker job, because if those ping-pong balls don't fall the way L.A. needs them to, I'm not sure I'd jump into that mix.
Yeah, I don't know if I would either. I mean, is D'Angelo Russell going to be a star? Maybe. I don't think Julius Randle is. I think he's a nice player, but I don't think he's a star. Jordan Clarkson's a sixth man.
Yep.
And they're going to go spend a lot of money this summer on probably on guys like DeMar DeRozan and maybe like Hassan Whiteside or some other guy like that. I don't know. That's an okay team.
I think the only way this is salvageable is if Luke Walton comes down there, because Luke at least represents not only the present but the future. He had a great run as the interim coach filling in for Steve Kerr, and he's a guy that seems to get better at his job every single year. So you bring him in, and all of a sudden you have a young coach with a young team, a guy with a connection to the Lakers of yesteryear who can connect to the fan base, who would be supported by the fan base. That, to me, would make some sense. They don't get him. Is it another temporary fix? Is Jeff Van Gundy the guy?
I can't see Jeff taking that job either. I mean, I think Jeff's going to be the Houston coach
pretty soon.
Too. Also, I just don't think he makes a lot of sense. They like to hire people that they're familiar with, and I just don't. I don't see Jeff going there. And look, here's the unspoken thing about Luke Walton, right? There's no question that Jeannie Buss and her brother are, in the next year, going to really engage in a full-scale war.
Civil war is coming.
It's coming. And, you know, Jeannie's been out front saying, oh, this three-year plan is going to end next year, and then, you know, Jim's just going to gracefully leave his job. That ain't happening. And at the same time, I talked about Knicks West. Knicks East, their president, Phil Jackson, who happens to be the fiancé of Jeannie Buss, has an opt-out in his contract next spring. And if something doesn't happen this spring with him with the Knicks, there's no reason to think he's not going to opt out next spring and go back to L.A., you know, when theoretically this three-year plan is going to end. And Luke Walton is a guy who Phil wants to coach the Knicks, has played for Phil that whole time with the Lakers, would be a guy he would want to coach the team. So, you know, he's probably the only candidate that kind of bridges the two sides in terms of, you know, if they hire basically anybody else, if Phil comes in a year, that guy could get run. So if you're if you're Jeff Van Gundy or any of these other people who might look at this job, if you see Phil Jackson on the horizon, why are you going to have any interest in a job where 12 months from now you could just get shivved in the back and thrown out the door?
How does Phil spin leaving New York after 3 years? How does he spin that? Like, how do you say, well, look, I gave you 3 years. I got you Kristaps Porzingis. I will hand it off to the extremely experienced Steve Mills here, who is going to take the ball and run with it in the future.
I don't even think he'll bother, honestly. I mean, he'll spin it as I wasn't given the kind of autonomy that I needed.
But he is.
No. I didn't say it's accurate.
Yeah.
I think that's what he'll try to do.
This is the one set of circumstances where I don't really blame James Dolan. I think James Dolan has been far more involved in previous regimes than the one with Phil Jackson.
Totally. I think that's how he'll spin it, that he couldn't quite implement what he wanted to do because Carmelo was already there, and he'll probably blame Dolan for keeping Carmelo. I mean, all things that are nonsense, but he'll find excuses. And look, we were talking about this, I think, the last time I saw you. If Phil Jackson wants to keep Kurt Rambis as a coach, he should get fired now.
Yeah.
So this is literally the one time, to your point, that James Dolan, if he does act on something, will be justified in it. So, as I said earlier, they're just two dysfunctional organizations, and in the next year, because of this whole Phil Jackson, Jeannie Buss, Jim Buss situation, is going to be utterly fascinating.
Well, the one thing I love about that situation is that Jim Buss started this ball kind of rolling when he said, yeah, 3 or 4 years, we're not in contention.
He made the mistake of putting a number out there.
He did. And Jeannie, in the last 2 years, has kind of refined it. She said, well, it's 3 years, then I'm taking over.
Yep.
She took that comment. It was brilliant. She took his comments, his own volition, those public comments, took it and ran with it and went and grabbed it and said, all right, here's the clock. Yep. It's ticking. And she even defined what contending is. Second round.
No. She defined it. No. She did. She said they have to be in the Western Conference Finals.
I read she also in a radio interview once said the second round,
look,
too. So
the funny thing is, I don't think that they've done a horrible job since the extension. I think they've at least gotten themselves some younger pieces, and they filled in okay. I'm very curious to see what happens this summer, because I think they're probably going to just spend all their money on guys that aren't really worth it.
No, they're not getting anybody worth high value.
I mean, like I said, I think every day I think more and more that DeMar DeRozan's leaving Toronto and going there.
That's possible.
I watched that series. I don't see why Masai Ujiri would turn around and give him a max contract. I just don't think that makes sense. And, you know, they could end up with Hassan Whiteside. That's going to be a circus, you know.
Man. I mean, Hassan Whiteside at this dollar amount is great. Hassan Whiteside at near max money is terrifying.
Hassan Whiteside at $100 million in Hollywood.
Andrew Bynum.
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
I think you're right. I think they're building towards something that is going to become a public fight, too. Right now, it's not really a public fight. It's Jeannie on the airwaves, sort of refining that timeline. Jim kind of acknowledging that he is on the clock. But once we get to the end of next season, and that Laker team is what, at best, 25, 30 wins?
I mean, look, the best case scenario is probably that they keep their pick. right? So let's say they win the lottery and they take Simmons. Okay, so you got Simmons, Ben Simmons. You sign, say, DeRozan and somebody. We'll say Whiteside, just because he's a big and they need somebody to block shots. Mm-hmm. And they probably do what the Knicks did, right? They probably go from 16, 17 wins to, I don't know, 32, 34 wins-ish, which is a good step forward.
Right.
But they're certainly not going to be a championship contender unless Kevin Durant decides to somehow go there, which he's not.
Yeah, so, I think that's a pipe dream.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I mean, at that point, they've taken a nice step forward. Well, they're not in the second round of the playoffs. And so both sides are going to have an argument, and it's going to be a total disaster.
You know what it is with Durant, too? Like, even if you're not on the inside, if you just apply logic to certain situations, I think you can get a good glimpse into what Durant's mindset is. Because at, what, 27 years old, he's not signing on to a fixer-upper.
To me, there's three teams. Stay in Oklahoma City for one more year, which I think is by far the most likely. Go to Golden State, which ironically I think might have gotten a lot more likely with the Steph Curry injury.
Yep.
And go to the Clippers.
Do you think the Clippers more than San Antonio? I can tell you, okay. They're afraid of San Antonio.
You know what? Let me add a fourth, because I have thought about San Antonio recently, and I do think that San Antonio makes sense.
Yep.
And I could see that too. Man, that team would be something.
Yep.
But yes, I think that those four are the four. Like, Miami can't do it financially. They don't have the flexibility. And I don't think, you know, Washington is going to get in a meeting, but I don't think there's any way that he goes there.
He's not going there.
Barring something weird happening.
He's not going there. And look,
I agree with you.
I love Scott Brooks, but Scott Brooks doesn't help him there. He doesn't.
No,
he does
and
not
I wrote
him
that
there.
Too, and I agree. I only meant that if there's some weird, you know, if they manage to do some Danny Ainge thing and get some third star there,
yeah,
that, you know, turn Bradley Beal into DeMarcus Cousins or something and like completely change the calculus,
right,
then maybe they have a chance. But I don't think they can make a move like that, and I don't think he's going there anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think there's four teams that have a real shot, and, you know, teams like the Lakers and the Knicks and the Wizards, and they just don't.
And you don't put Boston on that list.
Listen, I know you're a Boston guy.
It's not just
man. Let me finish. I know you're a Boston guy. I think Brad Stevens has done an unbelievable job with a team that, frankly, I don't think is all that good.
Right.
There's a lot of pieces that, frankly, aren't that good.
They're not.
Isaiah Thomas is a really good player in the absolute dream situation that's turned him into this, you know, star there, and
right,
I don't think he really is one.
He's a top 25 player. And I'm using that because all-star.
Yeah, borderline. He might be a little lower than that. He's a good player,
right,
a really good player. He's not a star, but, like, this is the dream situation. And he's got a great coach, put him in a perfect situation. But what I was going to say was there's never been a free agent of note that signed with the Celtics. And until somebody does, I can't make that leap.
Right. Okay.
I just can't.
One thing I have said has to happen if Boston's going to get into the mix. They can't go to Kevin Durant and say, hey, we've got Isaiah and a whole bunch of draft picks.
That ain't going to work.
That ain't going to work.
No.
And the same thing can be said for Oklahoma City. Like, one thing with Durant, that from everything I've been told, is that he wants a plan to win now. Like, he's
right
in that, like, I'm in now in my prime years.
Right.
This four-year window for
yep
me to be great on a great team, that starts right now. You've got to come with vets. But if Boston, who has been, they've been in the mix on a guy like Bradley Beal. They were in the mix on Jimmy Butler. They were in the mix on Jahlil Okafor. If they can get in the mix on a trade, if they can go to Chicago and put together a trade for Jimmy Butler
right
before they sign Durant,
and
they
I
can
think
say
that,
to Durant, they can say to him and then go, hey, man,
and I think
I've
Jimmy
got
Butler's the move.
I think
Jimmy Butler's going to be a Celtic.
I was writing that for
a, well, you've been writing that a lot. And, I mean, you saw that press conference at the end of the season with Gar Foreman and John Paxson. I mean, they made it clear. I mean, they took some, I thought, some pretty not even veiled shots at Butler.
Dude, I got killed for writing Butler was on the trading block.
I know.
Killed for it. Chicago people calling me morons.
Oh, I know.
Which is not unusual, but
it might be true, but
could be.
But they took some very unveiled shots at the guy. And look, to me, with the way that season went, there's a choice there. They're choosing between Jimmy Butler and Fred Hoiberg. And they ain't choosing against Fred Hoiberg. Not after they got rid of Thibodeau to bring him in, make him their guy. And look, if you're them after the season they had, you trade Jimmy Butler for a boatload of picks from the Celtics. And look, Danny Ainge is trying to trade all those picks for whatever he can trade them for. You saw he's trying to trade four picks for Justice Winslow last
yep
year. So you trade all those picks for Jimmy Butler. You can say we're building around our young guys. And we got all these young players to go with Fred Hoiberg, and we can grow and restart things. And from the Celtics standpoint, if they get a guy like Jimmy Butler to go with that team, then yeah, maybe then something changes a little bit and he goes there. But I still got to see an elite free agent sign there before I'm going to be convinced.
Yeah, look, I think you've got to get the guy in trade. It's almost like the KG situation back in 2007, where they could go to KG and said, I know you don't want to leave Minnesota, but we've got Ray Allen. He's going along with Paul Pierce. We have the makings of a championship team. That might be able to convince him. I think the key for everybody is convincing Durant you're in win now mode. Not win 2 years from now. Right. Not here's what you can be. Here's what you are right now. And that's why I think your Clipper thing and the Spurs thing makes a lot of sense.
I agree. And look, to me, I mean, look, we're still waiting to find out. It's Monday afternoon, so we still don't know what the status of Steph Curry is. But look, if Steph Curry's out for 3 weeks, they're losing to the Clippers. And if they lose to the Clippers in the second round, all of a sudden, the biggest hurdle for me that was going to keep Kevin Durant from going to the Warriors was that if they win the championship, and they got the two-time MVP on their team, and they won two titles in a row. If you're Kevin Durant, I don't see what the upside in going there is. You can say that you just want to win, but that guy doesn't want to look like a hanger-on. I mean, he was the one who just said he was just talking recently about how they're being completely overlooked in Oklahoma City. Was he going to go to the Warriors as the fourth guy and be behind Draymond and Steph Curry in the pecking order in terms of, you know, local popularity and all that kind of stuff? I just couldn't see it. But if he was in the second round of the playoffs and they look limp against the Clippers, and they can't get anything done against that team, then if I'm Kevin Durant, I could come there and say, all right, well, I'm the guy that if something happens to Steph, you still got me.
Right.
And that just, to me, opens up a whole nother world of possibilities. And look, the Clippers, on the reverse, if Steph Curry's back and the Clippers lose, they're going to be trying to make moves. I mean, they could turn Blake Griffin into a bunch of stuff. They could probably trade Blake Griffin to Boston for a bunch of stuff. And then, oh, wait, hey, look, Kevin, we've got all this money and we just got all these assets. We got Chris Paul. We got DeAndre Jordan. You could be in L.A. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to get free agents to come here, unlike in Oklahoma City. I think they make a ton. And the Spurs, you know, I mean, with Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge in that front office and Pop, you know, they're certainly going to be in the mix.
They're never out of the mix. Nope. They're never out of the mix. All right, let me take a break here for a second. Because, Tim, I've got something that is near and dear to your heart.
I'm sure it is.
With the crazy schedules you keep covering the NBA, you'd be nuts not to wear something comfortable when you're on the run. I mean, think about it, man. Whether you're wearing a suit or sweats, you spend almost 24 hours a day, what? In your underwear. I know. You're thinking, why are we talking about my underwear? But stay with me for a minute here. It's simple. You need to try MeUndies underwear. They're insanely comfortable. They're made from sustainably sourced modal, a fabric that's twice as soft as cotton. Once you try them on, I'm telling you, you'll understand why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they're free. No questions asked. MeUndies has dozens of styles and limited edition prints to help you make a statement with your underwear, whether anyone can see them or not. And the best part? Shipping is totally free. So what are you waiting for? Get the subscription or a single pair and get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Mannix. That's MeUndies.com/Mannix for 20% off your first order. Save money and feel great at the same time. Again, MeUndies.com/Mannix.
I'm just going to run and buy a million right now.
A million. I'm telling you, I'm signed up for the next 3 years. I'm ready to roll. I will never wear, I don't even wash my underwear anymore. I'm just going to throw them out and get a new pair.
There you go.
From MeUndies.com.
You got all, I mean, with your 97 jobs, you have more than enough money to do that.
And you need them because you leave stuff in all over the place. I leave stuff in hotel rooms. How many phone chargers?
Oh, God. So many. So many.
I know
dozens.
Exactly how much they cost at the Apple Store.
Yep.
Like $29.99 at the Apple Store every time.
I've lost a dozen, probably.
It's not good. Some of those hotels, not to go too far off the beaten path, but some of those hotels, they keep in a drawer all like the old phone chargers that they have. So you can walk up to the front desk, say, you guys get a phone charger. Some of those Marriotts, they'll say, yeah.
That's a good travel tip.
There you go. See, they'll have a bunch of them there because they just throw them into a pot.
Yep.
Nobody wants to bring home old phone chargers. People cleaning the rooms don't care that much about that many phone chargers.
No.
It's too many. All right, so you said you're going down to D.C. Scott Brooks will be introduced this week as the next head coach of the Washington Wizards. Durant aside, I love the signing. I think
right,
he's an
too.
Ideal fit for that team because he developed all those guys on the Oklahoma City roster. He will be needed to develop John Wall and Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. I think he's an ideal fit for that team.
I agree completely. I mean, and even more than that, I mean, the thing that I wrote last week after this hiring was announced was, to me, the biggest thing was that Ted Leonsis was willing to step up and pay big money for a coach. Now, you could say that, you know, Scott Brooks getting paid $7 million a year to coach a team is probably market rate now, given that guys were getting $5 million a year ago who had never done anything, and Scott has a pretty damn good track record at this point. But still, I didn't think Ted Leonsis was paying $7 million a year for a coach. I mean, I didn't know if he'd pay $5 million a year for a coach. So to me, what that signaled was that this summer, even if the Wizards don't get Durant like we don't expect them to, they're going to go out and spend that cap space they've got, and they're going to go try to get guys. And if they spend the $30 million they've got plus keep Beal, with the mix they've got there, with Brooks coming in as a coach, they could easily jump back up into the top half of the Eastern Conference next season.
I agree with you, and I think he's going to do a fantastic job. I think they had to come in at $7 million because they had to close that quickly.
Yeah.
If they didn't
close
that...
Well, look, if they hadn't closed it before the Laker job was open, he might have gone there.
And even the Houston job. Like, the Rockets would have at the very least interviewed Scott Brooks and been part of that process and maybe driven the price up a little bit more. They had to come in strong to give Scott no other choice, because if that deal, if he had waited a couple of days and the Lakers job opened up, if they want him, and I start to wonder, did the Lakers really want Scott Brooks? Because
I mean, they probably didn't, I mean, given the way they did things.
Yeah, not to go back to the Lakers, but there couldn't have been a debate over Byron, right? You couldn't have,
the timing makes no sense unless they hire somebody in the next 48 hours.
The season was over in mid-December.
Right.
Like, it was done. Like, you're basically evaluating the last 4 months of the season. You couldn't have gotten to the end of the year and be like, all right, let's have a frank discussion about whether
unless they hire somebody by Wednesday, it doesn't make any sense.
Would you go there if you were Luke Walton? Cushy gig out in Golden State?
I might wait and
probably
see.
Probably makes good
money. I might wait and see on that draft pick. I mean, look, to me, I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't go there, actually. But I also... Luke Walton's got he's got a house a couple miles away from there. He played there a long time. He's got some different factors that weigh in on it. But I just think that team is a train wreck, and I wouldn't go anywhere near it.
Yeah. I think I like Scott, though, in D.C. I think he's going to do really well, and I don't think he gets enough credit for his player development skills. I think people look at the Thunder roster, and they say, justifiably, that Sam Presti is an excellent drafter, and his staff identifies talent in the back half of the first round into that second round. But you can't just throw Serge Ibaka and Reggie Jackson and others. Steven Adams is another one that worked well under Scott Brooks. You can't just throw these guys onto the roster and say, just go out there and play. You need a coach to harness that talent and develop that talent. And I think Scotty doesn't get enough credit for that part of it.
I don't think he gets enough credit for his whole tenure there. I mean, look, is that team better with Billy Donovan? Does anybody think that?
They're a better passing team.
They pass a little better. Their defense is a train wreck.
Yeah, defense is a train wreck.
They don't try at all on defense anymore.
Yeah.
And
Westbrook kills them.
And under Brooks, those guys were committed to him, and they busted their butts for him.
He held everybody accountable.
He did. I mean, he benched Westbrook in a finals game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were parts of his tenure that were not great. Their offense was not very creative. However, I don't think their offense is all that creative now. And if you've got Westbrook and Durant, maybe it just isn't going to be, because they're just going to hold the ball a lot. That's the biggest thing. I'm curious to see how that looks with the Wizards when he's got a guy in John Wall who is kind of fundamentally built differently than Westbrook, and you would think you could have a more free-throwing offense with him there. But even still, I mean, everything else, their defense was really good. Those guys clearly respected him. That he held those guys accountable. He had a good relationship with them. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a good hire. And I think, you know, especially for a team that for so long has been just kind of an also-ran franchise, even just not only in the NBA, even in that city, as kind of the fourth team in that city by a significant margin in terms of interest. I think getting a guy like Scott, committing him for 5 years, you know, I thought another notable thing was that Tommy Shepard, the vice president of basketball ops, stayed out there after Ernie Grunfeld came back. Kind of makes you think that that's probably kind of the next succession plan for the Wizards. Not that they're going to shove Ernie aside, but I could see Ernie kind of becoming just kind of the president.
Well, no, that was their DeAndre Jordan moment. They want to make sure nobody showed up at Scott's door.
Well, maybe, but
blocked the cell phone signal.
But I do think that, you know, Ernie's over. I think he's in his early 60s now.
Yeah, been around for a long time.
Yeah, and I could, you know, Ted Leonsis also has a track record of promoting from within. You know, I could see, you know, Tommy kind of becoming the point man and kind of like, you know, in a different sport, but what Glenn Sather did with the Rangers, he's kind of still around, but they promoted a long time number two guy to be the GM, and he's just kind of overseeing things. I think that makes a lot of sense for them too. And I just, there's a synergy there that hasn't really existed the last few years with Randy Whitman kind of in and out of being on the hot seat.
He was on the hot seat like until he got himself off it for like a day and a half. And I think that really hurt the psyche of that team, because now you look at these guys, I feel like these guys are going to embrace somebody to come in there and have the type of stability that Scott has over a 5-year deal. I think John Wall is desperate to learn from someone like Scott. Same thing with Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. It has just been, it's just been 1 week where Randy Whitman's fired, a couple of days when he's not, the next week Randy Whitman's fired again.
Yeah. Well, and look, every season, right? Every season this team, you know, a friend of ours, Brian Windhorst, he would always joke that it's like firing time for Randy Whitman. Because every year in like January or February, they'd be, oh, Randy Whitman's about to get fired. And then these zombie Wizards would come back with this crazy hot streak.
Playoffs.
Right. And then they get back in the playoffs and they do all right.
Yeah.
And this year they just never quite had the hot streak. But if every year you're in the situation where the coach is about to get fired and then doesn't, I mean, how can you have any kind of longstanding stability and trust within your organization? It just doesn't work.
I didn't love, you know, and I'm not a scout by any stretch of the imagination, but you watch the end of games for the Wizards. Didn't seem like there was a lot of creativity.
No.
With their offense.
There
and
wasn't.
That's where, and I have this argument with people all the time. Like Clark Kellogg and I have had this discussion on the air before about the value of coaches in basketball. He's like, well, it's about 10%.
No.
No, I think it's more like 25, frankly. And I think a great example of that is Boston last night, Boston on Sunday night, where Jeff Teague in that final play of regulation for Atlanta, what was that? Like when he gets ball and just stands there for 18 seconds.
Terrible.
No movement whatsoever. Like, you need to have a good play call. And Mike Budenholzer is a great coach. I respect him a lot as a head coach. But that's where coaches in the NBA make their money.
Yep.
When you can come up with a great play call to get your guy an open shot.
Yeah, no. I tell people all the time, like, when people want to know if a college coach could work in the pros, I tell them to watch their out-of-bounds plays.
Yep.
Because I covered a bunch of those Butler tournament games, and Brad Stevens would get his team an open shot or a layup out of just about every out-of-bounds play or every timeout play. And that doesn't mean that the guy's always going to make it, but at least they would get an open shot. And he would put his guys in position to make a shot. And you watch a lot of, you know, especially in college, you watch a lot of these coaches, and it can't do it. And those guys, when they come to the pros, they're a disaster because that's the kind of stuff you have to do. You look at all the best coaches in the league, that's where they make their difference. Is they're not, the players have to execute it, but you have to have a coach that's putting you in position to get the job done. And, you know, you look at any team, any elite team in the league pretty much, that's something that they all have in common.
Yeah, and I think even strategically, I thought Brad was outcoached in the first two games against Atlanta. I thought Budenholzer did a better job, especially in game two, in the way that they defended Boston. But the last two games in Boston, with the changes they made, first with Jerebko going in the starting lineup, then Evan Turner going in the starting lineup. I thought the moves he made, Brad Stevens, they were masterful there. They had a huge impact on the game.
I agree, but I'll, at the same time, I mean, this Hawks team, they're the worst. I mean, that game.
The worst?
Look, they blew that game last night. I'm sorry. The final 8 minutes of that game, every time down, they had a wide open shot. And all these guys who were better players than the guys on the Celtics were choking it up.
Yeah.
Al Horford gets wide open mid-range jumper, clangs it. Yeah. Kyle Korver gets wide open.
Horford, like, people asked me this morning, like, oh, what does Atlanta have to do to get Al Horford better shots? He got great shots.
Right.
He got open looks.
They just
were
missed.
All there.
Kyle Korver misses two wide open threes in the fourth quarter. Marcus Smart, who can't shoot, hits two covered threes in the fourth quarter.
Like, he's a giveth tick of the way type of
I know,
there.
But it's just, it was, you know, they did the same stuff last year in the playoffs. They're a really frustrating team because you look at their talent, they have way more talent than the Celtics. And that's especially now that Avery Bradley's hurt, Jay Crowder's not 100%. Like, Al Horford and Paul Millsap are way better than anybody on the Celtics.
Teague is, too.
And Teague's at least as good. Him and Isaiah Thomas are basically the same player.
Yeah.
And Kyle Korver's probably better than whoever his alternative is on the other team. So you're talking four of the five best players in the series. You know, maybe you want to say Crowder's four of the top six. Either way, four of the top six players in the series are on the Hawks. They should win the series easily.
Yeah.
And instead, they give up leads every game and, you know, game four, they have all these open shots. You mentioned the play at the end of regulation, just atrocious.
Look, they're an Avery Bradley injury from being down 3-1.
Right.
Like,
they would have won game one. Right. Boston would have won
game one. Killed the momentum with 5 minutes left.
Yep.
Killed their momentum.
Yep.
They're lucky that Bradley got hurt.
No,
that changed.
And you know, to me, if I look at this, right, let's say Boston somehow wins this series. I still don't think they will. I think Atlanta probably wins in seven. But let's say Boston wins the series. What do you do if you're the Hawks? I mean, do you get rid of, do you let Al Horford go? Do you pay him $130 million? I don't know. I would look at this team and just wonder, I mean, is it the coach? I think Budenholzer is a decent coach, but I would look at this team and I wouldn't know what to do because they should be better than this, and they're not.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they lack talent at certain positions. Like, I mean, Kent Bazemore has had a good year for them, but, you know, Kent Bazemore is streaky, one-dimensional.
Right, but he's their fifth starter.
Right.
And he's a good defender. Right. He's a decent shooter. Like, I mean...
Look, this is why that the Hawks, no matter what they say, were looking at trade deals. They were looking
right.
to move guys like Jeff Teague.
Right.
They were looking to maybe move an Al Horford for a sweetheart type of deal. They weren't trying to dump these guys,
no.
but the reasons you articulated, like, oh my God, where are we right now?
Right.
That's kind of why. Like, you know, they are probably a second-round team, maybe even a conference finalist, but they're not a contender against Cleveland.
No.
They
no.
can't beat Cleveland.
No, they got crushed by Cleveland last year, and they got crushed by
can't
Cleveland this year.
Can't beat them. So I don't know. You're right. Now, what do they do with that team going forward? I don't know. San Antonio, they sweep. Kind of expected.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a thing this morning just kind of praising Memphis.
Yeah, you praised Memphis. What's up with that?
I mean,
I didn't have anybody. You're right.
I just give them credit for just fighting the way they did. I mean, I was at the game against the Warriors that they probably should have won. I mean, the Warriors really lucked out to win that game, allowed them to go on to win 73. But, you know, their wins, they didn't have many wins late in the season, but they beat the Clippers, they beat the Cavs, they basically knocked the Bulls out of the playoffs. They nearly beat the Warriors. They frankly played pretty well against the Spurs. I mean, game three was a 6-point game with 3 minutes to go. I just gave them credit because they could have easily just folded up shop with all the injuries they had. And the fact that they, you know, I think it probably wasn't a great thing for them to get into the playoffs because I think Mike Conley could leave.
Yep.
And then they could be terrible next year and then not keep their draft pick anyway. But I think they deserve props for fighting to get into the playoffs and at least putting up a representative fight.
Mike Conley is an interesting free agent situation.
Very interesting.
Because I think he's a max player, especially when you look at the four-year max.
He's, right, he's 100% getting a max.
There's going to be a dozen teams out there saying four-year max for Mike Conley.
Both teams in New York probably will.
Yep.
Among others. Could see Philly.
Among several others.
Right.
Yeah. That being said, does Mike Conley feel beholden to Marc Gasol to come back? That's the question I have, because Mike Conley was part of the recruiting process of bringing Mark back to Memphis. I find it hard to believe, and Mark and I have had this discussion, but I find it hard to believe that Mark didn't ask Mike, what are you going to do?
Right.
When Mark signs back up for the long term. And Mark's a little bit different because Mark's basically been in Memphis since he was like 16 years old.
Right.
He was with Powell living there early on before he was ever thinking about being...
Went to high school there, right?
Went to high school there, did a lot of stuff growing up there. Mike has had his whole pro career there, but this is an Ohio kid, you know, not attached to Memphis in the same way Marc Gasol is. I'm fascinated to see how this works out, because if there isn't a sentimentality attached to that from
Mike
Conley, you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because Memphis, I think, they're in the exact same spot that Atlanta's in.
Yeah.
Like Memphis, like, what are we? We
right.
bring Marc Gasol and Mike Conley back. We surround it with a couple of other players. We're a playoff team.
Right.
But we're in Zach Randolph, we bring him back. We're a playoff team.
But you still don't have enough to beat the Spurs and the Warriors, and you are kind of tapped out. And look, I don't know about you, all season, I mean, last July when Mark signed, it was basically, all right, Mike's going to re-sign. And ever since then, as the year's gone on, it's just kind of been kind of a steady drumbeat of more and more going, well, maybe something might happen there. Well, maybe something might happen there. Maybe Mike might leave. And I don't know if he's going to leave. I know Chris Wallace went on Chris Vernon's radio show last week and said, we're 100% keeping him, and I know they're going to try to keep him. But
well, they have to do 5-year max.
Right. And I just wonder what's going to happen there, because you kind of just kept hearing in the background, this guy might not stick around. And I'm with you, because if they leave, you know, what do you do then? Do you try to get Marc Gasol healthy and try to trade him next season and just bottom out? I mean, you could, but the fans there probably wouldn't do that. They're in a tough spot because it's a tough economic market, and they got to try to stay competitive. You know, it's a weird situation, and you're right. I think if you look at it from a basketball standpoint, it's not like Kevin Durant, where he might be in Oklahoma City, but you can make a good argument that's the best place basketball-wise to be with
Absolutely.
Westbrook and Ibaka. But in Memphis, he could come to New York. He could go to Philly, where they got all these young guys to be the point guard there. They desperately need a point guard. You could find spots that make more sense for him to compete, and if he decides to do that instead of staying where he's been, they're kind of just stuck.
All right. I want to talk about Philly, but Tim, you're a well-dressed guy, so I want to read this for you. As we both know, covering the NBA, no easy task. You have to worry about deadlines, cranky players, and coaches, you name it. And a lot of times, You have to attend events where jeans and t-shirts just aren't going to cut it. And that's very rare for me. Well, now it's easier than ever for everyone to look good with Indochino. Indochino is reinventing men's fashion, and a made-to-measure suit is the best suit you'll ever own. Be unique, look good, feel good. Get a one-of-a-kind, made-to-measure suit from Indochino where you customize the details that you want. Pick your lining, lapels, personal monogram, and much more. I mean, think about this. There are 14 unique measurements that go into an Indochino suit to make it fit you perfectly. This thing will fit your body like a glove. And they also make made-to-measure dress shirts and men's accessories. I'm telling you, this stuff is great. And thanks to Indochino, made-to-measure suits are now affordable and available to the masses. They're one of a kind, and they're way better than a generic off-the-rack suit. When you look good, you'll feel good, and you'll feel confident. Plus, there's a money-back guarantee. Now listen up, because they're offering an awesome deal just for my listeners. Today, get any premium suit for just $399 at Indochino.com when entering the code MANIX at checkout. That's up to 50% off, and shipping is free. I mean, seriously, you can't go wrong here. There's absolutely no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good. And a suit classic from their premium collection will look good, feel good, and last. So support them like they support this podcast. Go to Indochino.com, enter the promo code MANIX for any premium suit for just $399 and free shipping. Indochino, your look, your way. All right, so the Philadelphia 76ers have a new general manager.
Yes, they do.
I disagreed with the progressive pushing of Sam Hinkie. I think it's the best way to kind of define it.
I agree with that, too.
It was
I agree with the terming and the pushing him out.
It was almost like a Milton from Office Space sort of moment where you kept like demoting him and until he's carrying his red stapler into the
yes.
into the office downstairs. And I disagree with it because I think a Jerry Colangelo-Sam Hinkie pairing is really good.
It was never going to happen,
though. But it, like in theory, it would have been great.
But it was never going to happen. It was never going to happen from day one. There was no way.
Well, I actually agree with you. When I tweeted out the day Colangelo got the job, I said, Sam Hinkie just got demoted.
It's over.
And people are like, no.
He didn't get demoted. He got fired.
They look at...
He got fired that
people
day.
At the time, though, looked at Jerry like he was this weekend at Bernie's guy go hanging out.
People didn't have any clue.
No clue.
I mean, Jerry Colangelo has been running basketball teams and running basketball enterprises for 50 years. He wasn't going to come into the Sixers after being, you know, kind of blessed by Adam Silver to do it and be, oh, I'm going to show Sam Hinkie the ropes.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if the plan necessarily from the start was to hire Brian Colangelo. I think it might have been. They talked to him and Danny Ferry. I think there was probably some debate about which way to go with that. But the bottom line was Sam Hinkie was not a Jerry Colangelo guy. They come from diametrically opposite ends of the spectrum, which to your point could be why it would have worked in some level.
Yeah.
But the fact that they bring in Jerry Colangelo and give him the ridiculous title of chairman of basketball operations just to make sure that they give him a title above Sam Hinkie,
right,
who was president, said all you need to know about this situation right from the chair.
Well, the story broke as advisor, and then the press release goes out, like, chairman,
yep.
Okay, that's gaudy.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
He's in charge.
Yep.
Was never just this
was never gonna
advisor
happen.
Type living in Arizona, watching from afar.
And look, I've written a lot. The thing that Sam screwed himself on was he didn't do the PR he needed to do with this plan he had. Because look, in the broad strokes, I agree with what he did. But if you're going to be terrible for 3 years in a row, you got to be out front and you got to be selling yourself and selling what you're doing and saying, look, I know we're terrible now. This is why we're not going to be terrible in 2 years.
Right.
And you got to convince people that's the right thing to do, especially being in Philly. I mean, you know that market. It's not that dissimilar from Boston, being a market where talk radio is huge. You know, at least in Boston, there's a couple big papers there. Philly, the papers don't have any say.
Right.
It's all talk radio. And, I mean, talk radio guys, as you know, love to get on the radio and just start giving opinions and determining things. So if Sam Hinkie's just going to sit in the back room and not come out and tell people what they should believe in what he's doing, you're going to have people setting the agenda. And not just there. There's people nationally did the same thing. And the fact that he put himself in a box like that, it put him in a situation where when things started to go really bad this year, they get off to that rough start. Robert Covington gets hurt. Jahlil Okafor punches a guy in the face in Boston outside a bar. I mean, all that stuff comes together, and all of a sudden the owner panics and says, this isn't working, and they go and get Colangelo to come in. Because by all accounts, Sam Hinkie should have gotten this season and this summer to start turning this around. Because let's say they get the Laker pick, finishes fourth or fifth. say they win the lottery, they could walk out of the draft with Ben Simmons and Chris Dunn and go into free agency and sign a guy or two. And all of a sudden, there, Dario Saric said, I think yesterday, according to David Pickey, he's coming over. All of a sudden, they could have seven, you know, maybe Joel Embiid, somewhere else gets healthy. They could have seven or eight first-round picks and free agents on the team. And all of a sudden, they could have the best young core in the league. You know, yeah. it's not an implausible scenario. But they let him go about 2 years and a quarter and then said, you know what, we're going to bail on this. And if it works out over the next year, he'll get no credit for it.
Right.
And it just is kind of silly.
Right. I think he'll get some credit for it because
if
all these players pan out, it's never going to be painted as this was Brian's great job out there or Jerry's great job over here. I mean, if Joel Embiid turns into the player we all kind of thought he was going to be,
and
look, he could come back next year. What's he, 21, 22 years old? I mean, he could come back next year and look
He's a monster talent.
Look, he would have gone number one hands down that year.
Easy.
No question he would have gone number one. If he comes back in a year and looks like the player, I mean, think about what this team could be in a year with Saric coming over, and if he turns out to be Tony Kukoc or something. And maybe Chris Dunn, where I thought that Sam made, and I wrote this, where I thought Sam made the mistake was not doing the little things that could have appeased the fan base. Like Ish Smith, how much did they embrace Ish Smith in Philly?
Right.
He was like a conquering
returning. Why didn't they go sign Jeremy Lin last summer?
Yes, or, I mean, not even.
But I'm saying, he was on the Lakers a year before. They won 16 games.
Yeah.
I mean, if you brought Jeremy Lin there and he started, okay, maybe they win 20 games instead of 10.
Right.
Is that really killing you? No. And people see it as, they can watch Jeremy Lin, and he's a competent point guard, and he can come in and run the team a little bit, and you're not going to be historically awful.
Right.
You know, instead you're playing TJ McConnell. You know, I mean, it's not killing you to play Jeremy Lin instead.
Could you see any team out there taking that approach, the Philadelphia approach? Let's say a year from now it looks like what we think it could look like. Could you see this approach ever duplicated?
Yeah, I think you could. Because I think the approach is not that much different than what a lot of teams have done. The difference is that Hinkie kind of did it in a scorched earth scenario. And, like, if he had just done a little bit of appeasing people, like you said, I think things would have been fine. I mean, how much different is what they did than what Minnesota did, really? I mean, Minnesota got rid of Kevin Love.
Right.
They ended up getting Andrew Wiggins. They're terrible last year. They get the number one pick. I think they're going to be awesome this next year with Thibodeau, but they were awful again this year. They're going to get another top five pick. You know, the Thunder were awful 3 years in a row. Look, to me, I've been telling people, what's the difference between Philly and Orlando? Is there really a difference?
No, I think
they went out and signed C.J. Watson.
Orlando is like a year ahead of Philly.
No, but I'm saying in terms of what they've done.
Right.
They just keep getting top six picks.
Their guys. The only difference is their guys have been available to play. The guys that they've
drafted. Right. And they did sign a couple. They had a couple of veteran guys on the team.
They traded them away.
Yeah, they did like the window dressing stuff that Sam didn't do. But that's really the only difference.
Yeah.
I mean, people have been doing this general thing for a while. They just didn't kind of rub people's faces in it and just literally give away every possible asset they could and try to win seven games.
Orlando, though, is what Philly should be afraid of because Orlando, like, they've got all this young talent, but they basically quit in the second half of the season. They look like a playoff team the first month and a half of the year.
Yep.
Then the going got tough and they folded.
They folded.
They just folded down there.
They did all the stuff that they weren't supposed to do with Scott Skiles.
That's the danger when you stink up the joint for two consecutive years. The habits of losing, you can't shake them that quickly.
No, I totally agree. And when you don't have any vets in the room that you can really count on. I mean, look, even Orlando trading Channing Frye away, you know, like I know they brought in Jennings and Ilyasova, but like, why are you trading Channing Frye? Like, that's the kind of guy you should have on that team. He's got a good contract. It's not like he's eating up your books.
Right.
You know, I know they want to go out and spend big in free agency this summer, chase guys like Horford or whoever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's not going to make the difference. But to your point, if you have all these young guys that never won anything and they're just used to losing, how are they going to learn how to go from point A to point B?
Right. I agree with you. All right, I want to talk to you about Cleveland in a second, but Tim, as an established NBA writer, I know that you don't have to worry about getting a good seat for the games. Well, maybe some arenas you do. But obviously not everyone is so lucky. It can be really tough getting a seat to a game or a concert in town, especially for a good price. That's why the best place to go when you need tickets is SeatGeek. I'm telling you, it's the only place I ever go to buy tickets to a game or a concert. You'd be crazy not to try it. They make it so easy. I mean, there's virtually no hassle in getting the exact seats that you want. And it's pretty cool how they do it. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you can save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use the SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. See what I mean? Easy and painless. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it all the time because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. Now, pay attention to this next part because it's really important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right in your pocket. And to get it all you have to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, then enter promo code Mannix. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It doesn't get any easier. So go support them like they support this podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Mannix today. All right, before we finish up, Cleveland. Four-game sweep.
Yep.
Made it look easy, especially the last three games.
I don't know if I go that far.
Stanley Johnson in LeBron's head didn't really...
No, I think that's given Detroit a little bit of short shrift. I mean, those games were all competitive.
I thought Detroit blew their opportunity in the first game.
They should have won game one. Yeah. When they hit all those threes, they should have won. I just want to give them a little bit of credit.
Oh, look, I think Detroit was maybe...
Detroit would have beat Toronto.
An underrated eight seed.
Detroit would have beat Toronto.
Yeah, because Detroit wasn't... Like, this Detroit team, if it had been together all year long, probably not the eight seed. Probably something higher than that because... Yeah.
They won more games as an eight seed than any team in 20 years in the East.
I guess my point with Cleveland is that I thought they played well. I thought Detroit played well.
They did play well, for sure.
But I thought Cleveland kind of, for most of these games, got it together. You saw Kevin Love had success at the center position.
They made the plays down the stretch of games to win each game.
Yeah.
Did what they needed to do.
Based on these four games, has your opinion on the Cavaliers changed?
No. I think if Stephen Curry's healthy, they're going to get to the finals and get run by the Warriors pretty easily. I think if Stephen Curry's not healthy, they could beat anybody. I think the Spurs are the best of the rest of these teams. I think if Steph Curry's hurt, the Spurs will win the championship, but I could see the Clippers beating them, I could see the Thunder beating them, and I could see the Cavs beating them. They're all close enough in that next group that anything could happen.
I don't think they get out of the West if Steph Curry's hurt.
Oh, no. I'm saying I think if Steph Curry's hurt, I think they lose to the Clippers. But I mean, I think the Spurs could lose to the Thunder, the Clippers, or the Cavs. They'd be favored in each series, but I think they could lose to any of them.
Yeah, I think their path through the Eastern Conference is now a little easier than I thought it was going to be because whoever they get in the second round, Boston or Atlanta, they're banged up.
They're
going
to crush either team. Yeah, they would have crushed Boston too.
Yeah. Probably.
Boston would have been competitive, but it would have been a lot like last season. They just don't have the horses.
Exactly.
I mean, how much different is Boston to Detroit, really? Detroit's a really well-coached team with young guys. Detroit might have more upside with their young guys.
Right.
But, Boston's also a really well-coached team that doesn't have the horses to go with the Cavs. I mean, the Pistons would have told you we're just not good enough to beat the Cavs right now.
And where I once thought Toronto was
Toronto's
a legit
bunch
threat.
Of dogs. They're not. They can't win that series. You know, the one team that could make
but
it
did
interesting...
did you think they could have before the start of this postseason?
Never. I watched them the last years in the playoffs. They have the same group.
They're a little more mature.
DeMar DeRozan, as a playoff guy, if you have any kind of guy who can guard him, is not doing anything in the playoffs.
Oh, they're totally dependent on DeRozan.
The team that can make things interesting is Miami. If Miami gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, they're not going to beat Cleveland, but I could see that series going six games and making it interesting because LeBron has not played that well in Miami. And look, if there's any team that's not going to be afraid of him, it's a team with Joe Johnson and Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng and all these veteran guys that have been against him a million times. They've got the mental fortitude. They got a really good coach. They got a team that's got guys that have been there before. That's a team that could make it interesting. And if somehow Chris Bosh came back, which I don't think he is, then it would really be interesting. But I don't think he's coming back. So I think they could win a game or two and make it interesting. But nobody else in the East can touch him or even come close.
You know what I would do if I was Dwayne Wade in that series? I would bring up my friendship with LeBron in every interview.
Every day.
Be like, I was just on. I was on the practice court over there shooting with LeBron the other day, piss off every one of LeBron's teammates.
Oh, it'd be great. There'd
Mind
be so
games.
Many mental games going on there. It would be awesome. The only East series that'd be interesting.
I'd have an extended hug with LeBron before every game. I would hold that hug tight, like even as he's trying to pull away. I would hold
give
that
me a little
tight.
More.
Like extra dap. Like, LeBron, we got our signature handshake wrong. Let's do it again right here. Hold up. We'll do the jump ball in a second.
Listen,
extra handshake.
It would be juicy. It would be juicy. But look, no, I think they're going to roll through the East. And then, look, if anybody but the Warriors is in the finals, it's probably 55-45 or 50-50. I mean, they match up pretty well with the Spurs.
Oh, man, I don't know. Yeah, I know that they've had, what was their record in the regular season? 1-1? Or they split?
They split games.
They split.
Yeah, they split games. I'm not saying they would win, but to me, they have no chance of beating Golden State. They don't match up well. Golden State, if they're healthy, I think they're just by far the best team.
Oh, yeah, saw that but game in Cleveland.
Yeah, right, we were both there. It was terrible.
Brutal.
But if they get anybody else, they got a puncher's chance because they have LeBron. And you have LeBron against anybody else in a seven-game series, they got
Kawhi,
a shot. Kawhi's great, but they would at least have a shot against the Spurs.
Kawhi would shackle him.
Shackle him? Look, I voted Kawhi second MVP.
No. Okay.
I voted Kawhi second MVP, first in defensive player of the year, and second in most improved.
Yeah.
I think he is unbelievable. But
Kawhi's the next great thing.
I agree. Unless it's Towns. I think it might be Karl Towns. But Kawhi,
I don't think he's a two-way player like Kawhi is. I don't think he's on that level.
Maybe. I mean, Kawhi's incredible. I'm not trying next level.
Draymond's the only guy on that level defensively.
Yeah, I'm not trying to diminish that. But all my point was that I think, to me, if whenever we find out what happened with Steph, I think the calculus could really change for Cleveland. Because all of a sudden, you know, if they would have a shot. I don't think they would win against the Spurs. I think they'd beat the Thunder. I think they'd probably beat the Clippers, too.
Yep.
You know, and either one of them could easily get there.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the Thunder have always played the Spurs tough. But, yeah, I think that it's funny because, I mean, that's how these playoffs work, right? And 2 weeks ago, you would have said Cleveland has no chance to win a championship this year,
right,
basically. And now they could.
Injuries.
Yeah.
If Steph Curry's out for whatever amount of time and the Warriors lose, diminish what they did in the regular season?
No.
Diminish their place?
No.
Well, I mean,
I don't think it diminishes what they did in the regular season, but they're not allowed to say they're the best team of all time.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that I agree with.
Like, you can't.
It's unfortunate because it would be kind of out of their hands.
Yeah.
But if you want to say you're better than the 96 Bulls, you got to win the title. And if they don't win the title, especially because he gets hurt, it would suck, but there's just not much you could do about it.
They got to be rooting for the Blazers to bounce back and push that series.
Or win it somehow.
Win it somehow, because that Clippers was always going to be a physical series, and I think always a little bit tougher than people might have expected because it goes that way.
I thought it would go seven.
Yeah. Chris Paul.
I thought the Clippers would win in seven.
And Chris Paul was on his game when I was out in L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, he's sharp.
He looks good.
And Blake,
they're going to smell it too. I mean, that's a team of guys that have never done it. And they would smell it. I mean, they'd have a real shot.
Well, it becomes part of the strategy, too. And I interviewed a coach, an advanced scout, and an assistant coach over at the Vertical, and that just all of them basically said that if Steph's in the game, he's being run not just on pick and rolls, but you know, those baseline screens. Like, you're just running him, making him cut, making him work that ankle on every single possession.
Yeah.
He's become part of the fabric of a game plan there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What how long do you think he can be out before they have no chance?
Because
you think they beat the Clippers if he doesn't play? I don't.
No, I don't.
So how much of that series can he miss?
One game.
So you don't think he missed more than one game?
I think if he misses one game and they lose at home, I think they're in trouble.
I think he could come back by game four and they could win the series. Because I think they'd be down 2-1, probably.
Right.
And they'd have a shot.
They could, but then what kind of rhythm is Steph in?
No, I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but I think if he gets back by game four, which would probably be, if he has the lowest grade, if he has a grade one sprain, he probably misses 2 weeks. But it's probably the best case scenario, right? It's probably a 2-week injury. So if he can come back by game three or game four, I think they have a chance to beat the Clippers. I think if it's any later than that, unless, you know, they just play at a higher level than I think they can, I don't think they can beat them.
No. You saw the way they played with Curry out in game three against a lifeless Rockets team.
Well, it was kind of funny yesterday. I almost felt like in Sunday's game, in game four, they kind of benefited from it in the short term because they just looked asleep in the first half.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like they went in the locker room and were like, oh my God, we could be 2-2 in the series in 24
against
minutes.
Against the Houston team, doesn't look like they want to be
there. Right.
Like,
and so they came out in the third quarter and just annihilated them and played better than they had in a while. But I just hope he's only out a couple weeks. It would be a real shame if this season ends ends that way.
Have
for
you
them.
Seen a team do what Houston has done this year with the 180 from last year? Like this time last year, remember, people forget, they got, what was it, 4 or 5 games against Golden State in the conference finals?
They won a game.
They won a game. But the first two in Golden
State? In the first
State,
two games, they were toss-up games.
Toss-up.
James Harden basically fell down when he had a chance to shoot a game winner in the one game. Yeah, they had their chances.
Toss-up. Then they come back this season, lay an egg from the opening tip. Now they're going out like this, where they're basically lifeless out there, looking like they want to go home.
What
like,
do you think changed?
I think it all starts with Harden. I think Harden is the tastemaker for that team. Like, how he goes, everyone else goes. And I don't believe he came out with the same type of defensive intensity that he did last year. Last year, he was actually my MVP. I voted him number one last year over Steph Curry. Because I thought he did more with less.
Yeah.
You know, he carried that team to the number two seed in the West, and he did it on both ends
and
of the floor.
And he actually gave a crap at that end last year.
This year, the offensive numbers are comparable. I think they're even better in
some
ways.
They are better.
Like, but defensively, it's night and day.
He's back to being the worst defender in the league.
He's the YouTube clip. You know, that's what he is.
Yeah.
You know, with these bad defensive plays. I don't know how that ends. You know Dwight's gone. Like,
what is Dwight getting this summer, and from who?
I'm of two minds of Dwight. Number one, I wouldn't give him a max deal. You know, he's probably going to look for it. I wouldn't give it to him.
Right.
If he's taking less, though, on the right team, I'd take him.
So where is he going?
Put him on Boston.
I don't think he's going to Boston, but I could see that. I would make sense.
Like, they're old
that's
enough,
a team that should go for him.
They would have taken him last year.
Right.
I don't think Danny Ainge dislikes Dwight.
I think the Celtics should go after Dwight. I think he's going to end up with the Bucks or the Hornets, because I think the Hornets are going to have the money, and he's got a good relationship with Steve Clifford.
That's right.
And I think it makes a lot of sense, especially if they sign him on a 2 or 3 year deal.
Right.
Even if they give him the max, they're not going to spend that money anyway. I think it makes sense there. And look, I think Milwaukee's trading Greg Monroe.
He's gone.
Jason Kidd wants a center who can block shots, and they don't have one. They need one on that team, and they want to run pick and rolls. I mean, Giannis and Dwight in the pick and roll would be interesting. And if they can make the money work, I could see them giving him a max.
Max. What's max for Dwight, though? Like 25, 30? Oh, God. 30 mil a year on a 4 year deal?
I mean,
with his history of back injuries?
I don't know if it's a 4 year deal, but I could see a max for two.
Mm. Yeah.
I could see 60 for two or two years, 60 million, something like that.
That would scare me.
I mean, look, to me, if I'm a team that does that, I have him on a maintenance plan. It's kind of like what the Heat did with Dwayne Wade the last couple of years,
right?
Where they like kind of played him. The last couple of years LeBron was there, they kind of played him 55, 60 games. If I'm like the Hornets and I can get Dwight to the playoffs healthy, I mean, last night he had 15 and 15 in the first half, I think, or 15 and 10.
Right.
Like, he could still play.
Oh, I think he's been criminally underutilized.
Oh, I agree. And if he's playing on a team where he's getting the ball more than once every 10 minutes, like he is with the Rockets, he's probably going to bust his butt a little harder, just like any other big guy. And you're going to have a guy that's motivated. I think it makes sense. And you know, I just think he's an undervalued asset at this point in the market. The other place I could see him maybe going is Miami if they can make the money work. If he would take less money and Whiteside leaves, I could see him going there. That'd be a classic Pat Riley move.
He'd have to take less money, and he'd have to really cut that salary like to like 15 to 20, somewhere in that
range.
But
he might do that to go to Miami.
Might.
I could see that.
You got to be careful with Dwight with young players, because the example that he sets, I don't think
it's
going to be one.
And that might even be the best case scenario for him to go, because they've all got, I mean, that's just all vets.
Yeah, that's why I said Boston, though, too, because they're kind of at that point where some of their young guys are formed. You know, Isaiah is formed. Avery Bradley is formed.
I kind of wonder if Isaiah would have the same problems with him that James Harden does, though. Because, like, when I was saying Isaiah's in the perfect situation, I mean, when he's in Sacramento, there were at least rumors of him and DeMarcus having issues because he wouldn't get DeMarcus the ball enough.
Yeah.
And then he's in Phoenix, where they had a few guys who needed the ball, and they didn't get the ball. They all didn't get the ball enough. I kind of wonder if they had a guy like Dwight, would it just be the same kind of thing?
It might be a little
again.
Bit different just because it's Isaiah's team out there.
Yeah.
Like, Dwight wouldn't make it Dwight's team.
That's true.
Kevin Durant would make it Kevin Durant's team.
Right.
Dwight would be walking onto Isaiah's team.
And Dwight, it would be up to Dwight to try to prove that he's not the guy that people think he is at this point.
Yeah. Too. Yeah, that'll be one of the more interesting free agents out there on the market. Tim Bontemps, thanks for stopping by, my friend. Appreciate you hanging out for a little while.
Sure, man. Happy to do it.
All right. That's it for this week's episode. You can download this and many more episodes of the Vertical Podcast really anywhere that you download podcasts. And don't forget, you can also catch the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and the Vertical Podcast with Woj. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.